Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is Monday, February 15th, and the time is 1:30. I am Senator Mia Costello. I'd like to welcome Senator Stevens. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Senator Gray Jackson. Welcome.
Thank you.
And we have Senator Rivak with us today. He is going to be presenting a bill. I'd also like to thank the recording secretary and LIO operator, Carrie and Carson, and welcome Vice Chair Senator Holland. Welcome. No worries. So before us today, we have Senate Bill 69. It's been introduced by Senator Rivak, exempt renewable energy electric plants. And if it's okay, Senator Rivak, if we take questions throughout the presentation as we go. And feel free to introduce yourself and Dirk for the record.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Senator Rivak. I represent District M. I'm honored to be here today to introduce SB 69 to the committee. this is something that we're pretty passionate about, energy. Our resources in the state of Alaska, and certainly our renewable resources, are a very important part of that. What this bill does is nothing new. This is already in statute. This bill simply takes an idea that has worked over the past 10 years, and it extends it. And what that idea is that it eliminates a couple of the barriers to entry, overburdensome regulation to small under 65 megawatt power renewable energy power plants. So all by private investment. So what this is doing is encouraging, making it attractive in Alaska for private sector capital dollars to come and invest in renewable resource energy across the state of Alaska, which has worked. We've seen it work over the past 10 years, and again, this simply extends this program, which is already working so well. This will provide hundreds of jobs, millions of dollars in investment across the state. Since 2010, Alaska has exempted small power producers from regulations, provided that they sell power on a wholesale basis to regulated utilities that distribute the power to local customers. And this exemption, as I said, lowers the barriers, the cost of entry barriers. But it expires July 1st of this year, so again, that's what we're trying to do is renew it. This doesn't stop the power purchase agreements and the regulations related to those. As it relates to the RCA, this is only, again, just initial investments in small grids under 65 megawatts. The renewable projects that are affected by this could not have received any state grants or tax credits. And they have to be selling power on a wholesale basis, again, to regulated utilities for this to apply. The exemption made through SB 69 continues to maintain state oversight on the power purchasing, as I mentioned. And that, I think that's a key piece. So some of the folks who have, there's been very, very little, we've had overwhelming support. There's been very, very little criticism, more questions about, well, hey, you know, and so I've answered a couple of those questions, just basically would this do that or interfere with that? And so, you know, those questions have been answered here that we've received. We've received overwhelming support. And like I said, this has been in statute for 10 years. We're simply extending it. So with all that, I'll hand it over to my staff, Mr. Kraft, Mr. Dirk Kraft, and I would appreciate the committee's support in helping us to create and sustain a diverse renewable energy portfolio in our beautiful Alaska. And with that,
Madam Chair,
Senator Gray Jackson,
can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I have a quick question. Okay, this seems like it's just fine and not an issue. But you did mention that there has been very little criticism, which means there's been some. Can you kind of explain what the criticism could possibly be? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson.
Right. So in this in what I've just said, there's been a few. One is, you know, could there be gaming the system with state grants or state tax credits being a part of this? So that no, that's not possible. It's specified in what's currently in law. Little things like that. So there really hasn't been criticism, just questions to make sure that there's it doesn't open the door for wrongdoings. But as I mentioned through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, that this has already been in effect for 10 years, and so we haven't seen any types of issues related to some of the questions that we've received.
So if I can follow up, Madam Chair.
Senator Gray Jackson.
So it's been in effect, but what this is doing is allowing smaller 65 or less agencies, if you will, to come to be able to qualify. Is that what the point is in this?
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, I'm so glad you asked that question, because no, this doesn't change it at all. And I think that's an important piece of that bill, is that in its current form, it simply just extends the date. So I had thought about making this permanent, since it's worked so well over the past 10 years. However, you know, we thought it's good to have legislative oversight on issues like these. We settled for 10-year extension. So to directly answer your question, it simply extends the date that this law is already in effect. It extends it for 10 years. So it would have to have legislative oversight in 10 years from now. And I think that's fair, just to follow up on these programs every once in a while for the legislature to do that. And that's what we're doing right now.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Rebeck, I was curious, could you tell us who's taken advantage of this program and what is the cost of energy that they're providing and what regulations are actually being kind of waived or do they not have to go by?
So thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'll turn over to Mr. Kraft, and we do have some of the folks who have benefited from this program online as well.
For the record, Dirt Kraft, staff to Senator Rebeck. Madam Chair, the big one is Fire Island, which a lot of people are familiar with. That's 17 megawatts that benefited from this 711R exemption. There's the Willow Solar Project and Houston Solar Project right now that you're going to hear from them later online, how this sunsetting will directly affect them and their investment decisions going forward. Juniper Creek Hydro benefited from the 711R. Sweetwater Lake Hydro benefited from this exemption. As far as the regulations, those initial ones that they get exempted from, I think I would let Commissioner Bob Pickett explain that if he's online. He'd be a better one to go into that than me.
Okay, and then the other question I had is, what is the cost of energy that is being provided? And also, Dirk, if it's possible for you to provide my office with a list of everyone who's participated in this project or in this legislation.
Yeah, Madam Chair, we'll get that to you. As far as the cost, again, I would let Commissioner Pickett and some of those online. I couldn't tell you the power purchase agreements exactly how those were negotiated or what the kilowatt hour would have been, but they would be good to explain that.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Pickett, Senator Stevens, why don't you ask your questions, and then Mr. Pickett, if you could answer the questions that I had, if you have anything to add to those three questions. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just following along with your question, I was just wondering how many exceptions have there been? How many times have we done this? You asked for a complete list. That'd be good to have. Could you just give me a ballpark number?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I don't have a total list, but I can work on getting that to your office.
Thank you, Mr. Pickett.
Yes, this is Chairman Bob Pickett of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So what I would say is, as it was indicated earlier, Fire Island has been the largest single project under this exemption to date. What the commission looks at is when we have a power purchase agreement or a wholesale longer agreement, we evaluated in terms of what the avoided costs are for the utility, the regulated utility that is submitting it to the commission. That is going to be essentially avoided fuel costs for all practical purposes, unless there can be a strong case made for any avoided capital expenditures, which is typically quite difficult to do for variable forms of power. I couldn't give you the exact I was on the panel that approved the Fire Island wind project with SERI back, oh boy, been almost 10 years ago. But it came in relatively close with the other attributes to what Chugach Electric's avoided costs were at the time. One thing I would add is in the state of Alaska, there's roughly 128 certificated electric utilities. The commission economically regulates, I think, 31 of those at this point in time. And so the provision that we would have to approve the power purchase agreements would apply to those 32. It's not clear, and I think a little legislative clarity would help in this area, what the commission would actually be asked to do for these other non-economically regulated utilities. So that's in reference to 4205-711-R2. They tend to be the smaller, more rural. We do have a little bit of insight into them through the Power Cost Equalization Program and the filings we received from them on that. So with that, I'll be open to any additional questions you might have, Chair Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Pickett. So you mentioned the Power Cost Equalization Program. So some of the applicants are actually receiving benefit through the Power Cost Equalization Program?
That is probably an overstatement, because what we have to do is when we evaluate power cost equalization filings, we need to look at the actual fuel costs that utility incurs. And that tends to be very straightforward. You look at the number of gallons, the price per gallon, or other fuel source that they are using. And then we have to look at the non-fuel costs. And when we look at the non-fuel costs, we evaluate it in terms of if this was, in fact, a regulated electric utility, do these costs essentially line up in a range of reasonableness for that utility?
Thank you, Mr. Pickett. And, you know, I'm not sure if it's just me or if other members of the committee have this question, but so regulations are written after the legislature passes a law and it becomes statute, and the regulations are written to follow the law. So what specific regulations are we not following in order for these projects to be viable?
I'm not sure I quite understand. Can you get a specific? You're referring to what, the power cost equalization generally?
Mr. Pickett, I am talking about the sponsor's comment that regulations are being essentially waived for these particular projects. So it's the regulations that are written.
What it means, I think, what the project sponsor is probably referring to, and this is consistent going back 10 years, is the IPP, independent power producer, will not have to come into the commission and secure a certificate of public convenience and necessity, a CPCN, and that whole process, which takes time, and there is effort involved with that, and they will be exempted from other filing requirements with annual reporting and things of this nature with the commission.
Mr. Pickett, would it be possible to get the committee a list of the other regulations that they are not asked to comply with so that we're just aware of that?
Certainly.
Great, thank you. Are there any other questions of committee members?
Madam Chair.
Senator Stevens?
No, thank you. I thought that we were only talking about very small operations, but Fire Island at 17 megawatts, it seemed like a pretty good size. What's the size of the majority of these that we're talking about? They're much smaller than that, right?
I think your sizing of Fire Island is not correct. At this point, it's at 17 megawatts, but perhaps there's a Surrey spokesman, and it originally had the ability to expand up to, I think, about 55 megawatts. But most of them are quite small.
Okay, just trying to get my head around this. So what size would the majority of them be then?
Well, looking forward, I mean, we can't really anticipate exactly. It's going to depend on what forms of financing and ability to put the project together exist. But we've had, like a 1 megawatt type filing, a couple of megawatts up in Delta Junction that were not able to take advantage of this exemption because of timing and so on. But largely, they seem to be falling less than 10 megawatts. I think a lot of project sponsors would like to see something a little bit larger than that.
Thank you.
Senator Gray Jackson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the bottom line is they have to be less than 65 megawatts in order to qualify for this exemption, correct?
Senator?
Yes, Senator, that is correct.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I have a follow-up to that question. What if they expand to be larger, and if they're not doing annual filings, how would we know that they've expanded?
Well, the way Chair Costello, the way the commission would know is a regulated, economically regulated utility would have to file a new power purchase agreement or an amended power purchase agreement that would have that specific information in that filing.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Pickett. Senator Holland?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this would question be to whoever could answer it. Is this does it exempt the facility for the life of the facility as long as it doesn't change, like to increase its megawatt rating, or is it just for a 5-year period, 10-year period?
No, so Senator Holland, through the chair, again for the record, Senator Rivak, this is just for the startup, the regulations related to the startup. So as Mr. Pickett mentioned, they still would have the processes related to the power sharing agreements that exist, and those are separate. So this is some of the regulations related to that he mentioned, the application processes related to the startup barriers to entry.
Thank you.
And Mr. Pickett or Madam Chair, if there's anything I missed there, maybe we could.
Mr. Pickett. So this exempts these smaller projects from the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity. So based on your experience with other projects, can you tell the committee what are the estimated costs for a project to apply for a public convenience and necessity filing? I'm getting the impression here that it's a costly, time-consuming process. I'm trying to figure out what the benefit is from exempting somebody from having to do that.
Yes, Chair Costello, this is Chairman Pickett with the RCA again. The complexity of a CPCN filing is directly tied to the complexity of what that entity is asking to be allowed to do, because the commission by statute has to make a finding that the applicant is fit, willing, and able to do everything that they have filed with the commission that they say they're going to do. And that fit, willing, and able evaluation covers technical, management, financial, a whole range of things. And the package has to be put together in a fashion that it's well supported. And that means it's well supported both in technical, engineering, and in a legal sense. And so there is expense and time that it takes to put that together.
Thank you, Mr. Pickett. So in the interest of the public, wouldn't we want every project to have to be determined to be fit, willing, and able? I'm just not understanding why the size of a project would prevent them from having to be determined fit, willing, and able.
Yes, Chair Casella, this is Commissioner Pickett again. The way with the regulated utilities, and that's what my comments will refer to, when they submit a power purchase agreement to the commission, it's their certificate that's on the line. And the utility has to support and make it clear to the commission that this is the best way for them to meet their power supply needs for this period of time in this fashion, and that it's not going to impact their reliability on their system. It's not going to impact any issues, technical issues relating to CapEx expenditures, or that's been dealt with in the pricing. And so the utility itself has its certificate on the line when they bring those in to us, because they're the ones that have the ultimate responsibility to perform and to make sure that they perform adequately, safely, so on and so forth.
Senator Stevens?
Oh, thank you. I appreciate your answers there. Just a hypothetical question. Could a regulated utility also have a portion of their power come from unregulated? I mean, I guess, can there be a mixture, or is that simply not possible?
Well, I think that that can happen, and it has happened. Chugach Electric, for example, has been receiving power from Fire Island Wind for nearly 8 or 9 years now.
Okay, thank you.
And it's Chugach's responsibility to blend it into their system and make sure that there's no reliability or adequacy issues with that.
Any further questions from the committee?
Well, Madam Chair, if I could.
Senator Rivak.
Thank you. Yes, for the record, Senator Rivak. When this was put into place, so just to make a distinction between the power purchase agreement and the regulatory laws relating to those reports, distinguish between the independent power producers is two separate things. So when this was 10 years ago, when this was enacted, Alaska was the only state to extend the regulatory authority of a public utility commission like the RCA to not just the power purchase agreement, but to also the IPPs. So we were the only state to cause, as far as I understand, maybe Mr. Pickett could correct me if I'm wrong, but we're the only state that would cause the additional regulatory burden on independent power producers like these small renewable energy companies.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions of committee members? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead. I will open public testimony for Senate Bill 69. And if the members online could please keep their comments as brief as possible and state at the beginning of your testimony if you're in favor. I assume everyone online is in favor, just looking at the list here, but if you could just state for the committee if you're in favor of the bill and the extension. And we'll go ahead and start with Bernie Carl from Fairbanks. Hi, Bernie. Thank you for calling in and testifying on the bill.
Yes, Bernie Carl with Chena Power. I am in favor of extending this Senate Bill 69. I presently don't use it as a utility, but we are an unregulated utility. But I see the benefit of this as stated, Fire Island as an example. And I think that it will enhance other investment in Alaska for renewable energy. So I speak in favor of SB 69, and I hope that you will consider extending it. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernie. Next, I have Duff Mitchell from the Alaska Independent Power Producers Association.
Yes, hello. Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to follow some of our other APA members, but since you called me, I can go ahead and testify just for keeping the meeting going or the hearing going. APA, thank you first. APA is a diverse power organization group of many independent power producers. We have small, large solar, wind, hydropower. I would like to point out for the committee that independent power producers represent roughly 39% of America's electrical generation. In Alaska, that's less than 10%. We rank last nationally in IPP power supply, while Alaska also has the second highest average cost of electricity in the nation. IPPs represent competitive power. They put their money where their resources are, and they are not successful unless they can meet or beat the avoided cost of an incumbent utility. Why that is important is that any power sales agreement that is brought forward, like Chairman Pickett has mentioned, is brought forward in front of the commission for their approval. So it is already regulated. Any IPP is already regulated in the sense that their contract that they bring forward through the incumbent utility is reviewed. We're the only state, you know, if you look at the research by Legislative Research, they did a query. We're the only state that regulates IPPs. The federal government exempts IPPs from regulation for FERC standards up to 65 megawatts. So in an essence, we have a little bit, I wouldn't say overregulation, but we have more regulation than anybody else already. All this bill 69, and I'm supportive of it, all it does is extend what we've already been doing for the last 10 years. I would also like to point out that the U.S. Energy Information Administration projects that renewable energy mix in the United States will double by 2050. We need to put Alaska on the right platform and guide path to be able to do that as well. And I would just conversely say that we have more blessed renewable energy resources than any other state in the union. So Senate Bill 69, as was previously testified by the sponsor and others, it sends a strong signal to energy investment markets that Alaska and its leadership supports private capital investment in developing Alaska's renewable energy resources with the same regulatory consistency found in all other states. Again, I mentioned there's a two-step regulation process. This could be seen as burdensome. If you are a small native corporation and you have only $50,000 and you wish to put a little wind tower on top of your building or on top of a hill or put a solar array on your corporate headquarters out there in a village, you only have $50,000 to put in the engineering and the installation. You don't have necessarily another $50,000 to file and support yourself as a regulated or certificated utility. And I'm not saying it's going to be $50,000. It all depends on all the requirements and whatnot, but it is a very expensive proposition. Further, 711R does not preclude future regulation at the IPP's option. There may be benefits at some point in time or during the development process where regulation suits the IPP, the independent power producer. And so you could come in find yourself why and wherefore that you would want to be regulated. I would also add, and Mr. Chairman Pickett can maybe more exemplify this or amplify it, I should say, the RCA has a lot of tasks. They have a lot of duties, and they are extremely busy. I know this because I've gotten emails to speak on some other topics, and they're saying, look, our agenda's packed. We're tight. This is just one more perhaps unnecessary additional amount of filings that would reduce the RCA's burden as well. So in summary, you know, we've had for the last 10 years, there has been IPPs that have availed themselves to this exemption. I won't speak to this. I think there's letters coming in or others that will bring forward that. But this bill, just legislative, cures this issue to 2031. And frankly, I agree with the sponsor. It should be forever. Alaska does not need to be considered as over-regulatory or overburdened on resource development as compared to other states that were contacted through legislative research. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak on this matter.
Next, Suzanne Settle, and I may have failed to mention this, but we'd like public testimony to be around 2 minutes. So Suzanne with the Cook Inlet Region, please feel free to provide your comments.
Sure, good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Costello and members of the committee. My name is Suzanne Settle. I'm the Vice President of Energy, Land, and Resources for Cook Inlet Region, Inc. As you probably know, in 2012, SERI successfully completed construction on the Fire Island Wind Project, and we've worked previously with Senator Liesl McGuire to get the original exemption passed into law. And because of that exemption, SERI was willing to invest a considerable sum of capital to build the Fire Island Wind Project. And I'm happy to report that it has been operating very well for the past 8 years and produces approximately 4% of the energy requirements for Chugach Electric prior to their acquisition of MLMP. And I strongly support the passage of Senate Bill 69, which simply extends the term and does not change anything else. And it's been working very well for the past 10 years. And I won't belabor the points that Duff just made, but again, no other state currently regulates non-utilities. With the passage of Senate Bill 69, we can avoid double regulation, which the RCA does not have time to adjudicate. And I think it's really important that the committee understand that the only way that an independent power producer can build a project is if they can negotiate a contract with the utility where the utility is happy with the terms of the agreement, the utility has done its diligence on whether or not that entity will be capable of constructing and operating the project. So you have to get through a huge hurdle by negotiating a power purchase agreement with the utility before a project can be viable. You can't just simply build something and hook into the electrical grid. That's not the way that it works. But without the exemption, there will be significant operating and cost uncertainty for independent power producers. And compliance takes a long time, and it can be significantly expensive. So as you know, SERI used this exemption. We believe that Fire Island's success can be a model that can be used by other independent power producers, and we urge you to extend the sunset so that other IPPs can have regulatory certainty in their own respective project development activities. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Jennifer Miller and Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Suzanne. I appreciate your comment, but could we get an idea of what it is you've saved and not having to go through this long process? I mean, it makes sense what you said with Fire Island, but can you give us an idea of maybe the monies you saved, the time you saved, the manpower you saved by not having to go through the regulatory commission?
Well, all I can say, Senator, is that the cost of creating the application to get a CPC in would be expensive. And in addition, it's just uncertain what kind of annual or quarterly reporting filings would be required, whether someone would want to have additional information and require additional filings, whether the commission would then be forced to open up a docket to do a further investigation. All of these things would require resources from the company that has the independent power project, and they would have to be represented by counsel. And as you know, that's very expensive. And so it adds a huge question mark, and I can't put a number on it because I just don't know.
Well, thank you very much, Suzanne. I appreciate those comments. It's good to know that you avoid all of those costs by getting a waiver like this. Thank you.
Thank you. And next we have Jennifer Miller testifying from Anchorage.
Thank you, Chair Costello and members of the committee. Yes, my name is Jen Miller, and I'm supportive of Senate Bill 69. I'm the CEO of Renewable IPP, and we're an Alaska-grown small business who develops utility-scale solar farms here in Alaska. I'd like to thank the chair and the committee for hearing Senate Bill 69 today, and I'd like to recognize Senator Rivak for his effort to support the bill. So, to better understand the implications of allowing the current regulatory environment to expire, I'd like to share examples of our recent Willow Solar Farm and our upcoming Houston Solar Farm. The 1.2 megawatt Willow Solar Farm was built and brought online in 2019, and the project was automatically exempted from regulation. To complete this $1.5 million project, we worked with Magnuska Electric to complete detailed grid studies, an interconnection agreement, and a power purchase agreement. The RCA reviewed and approved this power purchase agreement, which sells power at MEA's avoided costs, and this regulatory oversight ensured that fair pricing for consumers. The Willow Solar Farm was also built to comply with MEA's interconnection standards to ensure safe and reliable operations. This solar farm has been in operation for over a year, and each month we bill MEA for the energy generated. This is a simple and efficient operation, and the existing regulatory environment enabled investment and a quick turnaround for this project. We're now embarking on our Houston Solar Farm, which is roughly 7 times the size of Willow and will almost double the solar capacity in the state. For this $8 to $10 million project, we completed very similar steps to the Willow project. The one exception is that because the project will come online after the current regulatory exemption expires, we had to file a petition with the RCA to request regulatory. As the statutory timeline for petitions is 180 days, I also asked the RCA for an expedited decision to support 2021 construction. I'm happy to report that just last week, the RCA granted regulatory exemption for this project and did so in under 90 days. While this is a fantastic outcome, and I sincerely appreciate the RCA for the initiative in their busy schedule and workload, I can't in good conscience ask for an expedited response every time or expect that exemption will always be granted. This unknown regulatory environment introduces significant uncertainty to our projects and potential delays. We're currently engaged with investors for the Houston Solar Farm project, and they're comparing our project with our other opportunities across the U.S. The other states don't require regulation of IPPs, and so this puts makes projects in Alaska less attractive. This is doubly hard, as many investors are leery of investing in Alaska because it is perceived as a new market. If the Houston project hadn't been granted regulation exemption, we would be required to pay a regulation fee on the energy that we sell, so that would reduce the project economics, and we'd be required to do the quarterly filing, which would require us to carry additional staff. And in the future, as more renewable energy assets are built, these will be, you know, more distributed assets, potentially owned by lots of different companies, and so each of them would be required to carry this legal and support staff to support these filings. From an investor perspective, this makes Alaska projects more complex, more expensive, less economic, and overall less attractive. Reduced federal tax incentives coupled with the fact that wind and solar are now the cheapest forms of new energy means that there's going to be significant private and federal investment in renewable energy projects in the next decade. It's also not a coincidence that wind turbine technicians and solar installers are two of the top three fastest growing job occupations in the U.S. Extending the existing regulatory environment keeps Alaska projects on a level playing field for investment and is critical to diversify our economy, reduce our carbon footprint, and provide jobs for Alaskans. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today and for considering Senate Bill 69. I'm happy to take questions at this time.
Okay, with that, is there anyone else online who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 69? Okay, seeing none, public testimony is now closed. Are there any questions of committee members for the bill sponsor while he's here in the capacity of introducing his bill? Okay, seeing none. So the intention then is to hold this bill for further review. And this concludes our afternoon's meeting. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, February 17th at 1:30. The committee will hear Senate Bill 24. This is a virtual meetings for corporations. This is a part of the governor's emergency declaration legislation that has already been introduced in the process. So we will be hearing Senate Bill 24. So with that, I want to thank Senator Rivak and Dirk for your presenting the bill today and those who were available to answer questions. And with that, the meeting's adjourned.